Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest today is Reina Grande. She is the co-editor, along with Sonia Guinasaca, of Somewhere We Are Human, Authentic Voices on Migration, Survival, and New Beginnings. She is the author of the memoirs, The Distance Between Us and A Dream Called Home, and the novels Across 100 Mountains, Dancing with Butterflies, and A Ballad of Love and Glory. And Reina, thank you for being a guest for Diverse Voices Book Review.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me.
So when I saw the collection of essays, it's poetry, it's art, what was the inspiration for you and Sonia to come together to put together this type of anthology?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think separately, Sonia and I have both been dreaming of putting together an anthology like this. We didn't know each other before we started working on the project. But, you know, for years I had been thinking about doing something like this. And fortunately, we have the same agent who introduced us. And, you know, we decided we wanted to put this anthology together. And then also our publisher, Harper Via, was very interested in this anthology. So we wrote up a proposal. We reached out to some contributors. Some other writers, you know, who would contribute a piece to the project. And then we pitched it to the publisher and they gave us the green light. And then from there, we just started working together on gathering the pieces. We put a call out for submissions, open submissions. And it has been such a wonderful journey in creating this project. But I think what we both wanted, and for sure, once we started working together, this was something that helped us work together in that we had the same vision in terms of wanting to have a book exclusively about, by and about undocumented Americans. Sonia and I were both undocumented. We grew up undocumented in the United States. She's from New York and I'm from California. And so we wanted this anthology to elevate undocumented voices and to center our undocumented experiences.
Talk about how you decided to divide the anthology into three parts: migration, survival, and new beginnings.
Yeah. So as we were thinking about the structure for the anthology, we decided that it should be separated into these three different sections. And because I feel that in a way it mirrors the immigrant journey, you know, of the before. There's the before, there's the during, which is that transition once we arrive, and that survival, right? And then after, starting a new life, and how do you begin again, and how do you create a new home? So we decided that the first section was going to be about migration and some of the pieces that talk about that experience of immigrating. We're going to go there. And then the middle section, which is the longer section, it's about survival. And that's where we put the pieces that focus on that, on what it's like to arrive here in this country, and then all the challenges and the obstacles that immigrants encounter, and what it's like to try to survive in a country that, you know, rejects immigrants of color, that marginalizes and that silences us. And then the third part, the new beginnings, it talks about, you know, what it's like to start anew. And of course, we decided to end the anthology with some of the pieces that are more uplifting. And you know, one of my favorite pieces at the end is Dulce Guerra's piece. And we put it there on purpose because it would have fit into the migration part. But her piece was just so sweet and so poignant. And I wanted the reader to kind of end the book with a piece like that.
Well, I want to talk about your piece, Not So Sweet Valley. And I think the challenges you face a lot of people can understand in terms of being raised one way yourself, your children coming up in a different way, wanting your children to appreciate the struggle, the challenges, wanting your children to have some connection to your home. And you talk about bringing your children to visit your family in Mexico. I believe it's an aunt where they don't have running water on the inside. And just so they can understand that experience. And for you, to some degree, this essay to me is you coming to terms with you made some choices so that your children would have a different life.
Yeah. And, you know, this piece, it's one of the first few pieces that I actually write from an adult perspective and where I'm reflecting on how my childhood immigrant experiences have impacted the way I parent my children. I used to write a lot about my childhood, and now I'm trying to write about my children's childhood because that's what I'm grappling with, you know, as their mother. And so in this piece, I write about how I struggle to reconcile my childhood of poverty, extreme poverty, and then the childhood of abundance that I have given to my own children. And it has helped me also understand my father's experience of bringing us to this country, because my father also saw that his children were, you know, assimilating, they were learning English and rejecting Spanish. And little by little, he saw that distance between us get bigger and bigger, and he could not follow in where we were going. And so he felt left out of our experience. And that's exactly the same way now I'm feeling with my own children, where even though I'm the one giving them that childhood, those experiences, the more I do that, the more of a distance that I feel with my own kids. And oftentimes I find myself on the outside looking in on their experiences.
One of the common themes I often find when I interview authors who emigrated is they don't feel home in America, and they don't feel home when they go back to their birthplace. That once they've spent time in America, when they go back to their home, their family and friends don't really consider them part of the country anymore. And you've had the same experiences.
Yeah, yeah, I did. I mean, since I was 17, the first time I went back to Mexico after I immigrated, I came here when I was 9 and a half. And so then when I went back at 17, I had been Americanized. You know, I spoke English better than I spoke Spanish by then. And I had had experiences, and I had learned how to see things differently. So when I came back to Mexico, it was such a shock to know that I had been fantasizing and romanticizing, and there was a lot of nostalgia for Mexico and for the home I had left behind. And then when I went back, I realized it's not here anymore, you know, and I've changed. And I'm no longer seen as Mexican enough. And so through the years, whenever I go back to Mexico, it's all such a bittersweet experience, because I like going back to my native country, but at the same time, I know that I don't belong there anymore, and that everybody treats me like a tourist, like an outsider. And so there's a lot of inner turmoil too, because I have survivor's guilt. And so when I go back and I see, you know, my family and friends and neighbors still living in that same poverty, I feel guilty because I know that I can leave it. I have an American passport that allows me to get on a plane and escape that life. And they cannot, you know, that's their reality. That's where they live. And so I come back with a lot of guilt.
There was a poem I really loved, You Find Home, Then You Run, in your collection. And there's a part in the poem where the author says, they say, He says, you find home, then you run. So then you find home, then you run. Then you run, then you run, then you run, then you run on them. And once again, there seems to be sort of, as the author, you're in this liminal space, sort of this sort of in-between space. And he, at one point in the poem, he also says that, I love my friends because they are the only country I can ever know. Mexico wanted me dead. This place wants me jailed, then dead, like so many poets long for the desert. What did you think of that poem by Jesus?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was such a powerful poem. And I think it really captures the experience and the feelings that we have as immigrants when we feel that we don't belong in either place, right? Our native countries, there comes a point where we're rejected by our the place of our birth, where we don't fit in anymore. And yet here in the US, no matter how hard we try, we're constantly feeling that rejection. And so we do live in the middle place, right? Where we have one foot in one country and one foot in the other, and we're constantly feeling torn in half. And so you have to learn how to live in that in-between space, in the hyphen. And Jesus's poem really captures that, of how eventually we have to learn how to create home in that middle space.
There is a piece of art by Julio Salgado, A Moment for Two. And it's a drawing of a father with a headphone on. The mother is asleep on his lap. And it says the name of his let mom and dad rest. Talk about how you decided to bring art into this collection.
Yeah, and that was Sonia's idea. You know, Sonia is a big advocate for visual artists, and Sonia was the one who had these contacts with Romy, with Julio Salgado, and they wanted to bring in some of these visual pieces. And once I saw them, I thought, like, it was such a fantastic addition to the anthology, because in the visual images, you really are able to capture that immigrant experience with just, you know, one image. And then they added text also to the images. So the one with the parents, and it makes you think about how hard our immigrant parents work and how all their lives, you know, they have sacrificed so much for us, given so much, and they just need a little moment where they can rest and then go back to that grueling work that they do. So it was a very tender piece.
I think it's really important for people to read books like this anthology, because all too often the opinion we have on these issues is based on a 30-second soundbite, you know, a one-minute report in the news. But by reading the stories of people who were or are undocumented immigrants, then you really get a true sense of their love, the trauma they face, their searching for home, what they bring to this country. And I think all too often there's just a shorthand analysis by some of undocumented immigrants.
Yeah. Yeah. And what this anthology is pushing against, that, right? Pushing back against the way we tend to speak about immigrants in terms of numbers, statistics, and data. And these are stories written by immigrants themselves, and they get to tell it in their own way. And collectively, you know, I mean, you get to see that there's similarities with the pieces, but then, so as a collection, you can see the universality of the immigrant experiences. But then you also get to see how each story is singular in its own way, you know, and each immigrant has a unique voice, a unique way of seeing the world, of experiencing the world. And so this is what I like about this collection, is that we try to highlight each contributor individually, but then it's also part of a chorus, right? It's part of this mosaic that allows you to really get a glimpse into the undocumented immigrant experience. But as we also point out in our editor's note, is that this anthology is not complete, because even though we have a large number of contributors in here, it doesn't capture in totality the undocumented experience. I mean, there's so many other stories that we were not able to include, so many other voices. And so this is just one contribution that we have made to undocumented literature, but there's definitely so many other stories that need to be told.
What was the experience like editing and having a collaborator as opposed to the work you've done? And I haven't read your entire list of works, but I get the sense that most of the work you've done by yourself.
Yes.
So what was that experience like?
Well, it wasn't as lonely because, you know, writing can be very lonely. It's just you in your room and your computer typing away and creating these stories. And it can be very isolating. And this was the first time when I collaborated on a project with somebody. And it was so nice to be able to, you know, talk to someone else, bounce off ideas and brainstorm together and come up with the vision for the project and how it was going to be, you know, put together. And then to also be able to have someone to do the work as well, right? Sonia was working with the poets, I was working with the essayists, and then sometimes I would send them an essay and say, oh, can you look at this and tell me what you think about it? And then sometimes they would send me a poem and I'll say, oh, you know, do you have any feedback for this poem? So it was just nice to be able to collaborate. And it's also nice now that the book is out that I don't have to be the only one going around the country promoting it and, you know, doing all these presentations alone. Usually, like, we do them together. We invite the contributors, or like tomorrow, for example, Sonia's going to be doing an event in New York and I'm not going to be there, but they're going to be there promoting the book. So it's nice having that collaboration, even in the publicity and in the marketing of the book.
What's the experience been like for you as you've gone out to promote the book and talk to the audiences, whether it's in person or whether it's through Zoom? What has that experience been like? Have there been any surprises in the reaction to the book?
I think it has been so beautiful, especially because we have tried to include some of the contributors in all the events we've been doing. And that to me has made it so special because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that we really wanted to do was to highlight other immigrant voices. And so to me, like having contributors come to the events and being able to read their work, present their work, it's so special seeing that. And especially many of our contributors, this is their first time that they've ever been published. And that, you know, it's incredible. It's an incredible experience. And I just feel so honored to have been able to open that door for them. And so to see them present the work, to hear them read from their pieces, to me, it's just such a privilege to have been able to do that.
Another essay I liked in the book was by Carolina Rivera Escamilla, The Promise Made, about her decision to leave El Salvador. And she goes to Canada, likes Canada, goes to Los Angeles, didn't really like Los Angeles, but then she remembered the promise that she made to her mother to reunite with her family in Los Angeles. Talk about your thoughts on that essay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we actually, you know, that's the first essay in the collection. And to me, it was a very powerful piece because she talks about the civil war in El Salvador that displaced so many Salvadorians, and we don't talk about it enough. You know, we don't hear enough about this experience of displacement, of exile, of trying to find asylum in other countries. And Carolina was very fortunate that she got asylum in Canada, but most of her siblings were here in Los Angeles. And so she had promised her mother that she would do everything she could to reunite with her siblings. And so she gave up the asylum that she had been given in Canada and became an undocumented immigrant in the US because she was not able to get asylum here. And to me, like that essay just really gives us an insight into this experience of the Salvadorian population that was displaced. And also in you know, it gives us insight into so many other experiences, not just from El Salvador, but all over the world, of people who have been displaced from their homes because of violence, because of civil war, because of political upheaval.
One of the things I think about a lot, and it's also mentioned, and I believe in some of the essays, is the role the United States has played in supporting regimes that have resulted in people facing war and brutality and violence and having to leave those countries because of our policies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's, you know, that expression, we are here because you were there.
Yes. Yes.
And it's something, you know, the people who are anti-immigrant, they refuse to acknowledge the role that the U.S. has played in that displacement of people. And, you know, people have been forced to migrate. Most of them, it's something that has been forced upon them. And we don't talk about how the United States creates immigrants and then we punish them for immigrating.
Another essay I had to read was by Julissa Arce, not of their world. She went to the University of Texas at Austin. And she talked about trying to fit in at Goldman Sachs. She mm-hmm. was undocumented immigrant. Working at Goldman Sachs was still undocumented immigrant. And how she tried so hard. And she wrote, as time passed, as I grew closer to my roots, I realized that no matter how hard I worked, how much success I achieved, or how many dollars I amassed in my bank account, belonging in a white world was not a dividend that came along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her piece, I really loved her piece because she touches on some of that experience that sometimes we have, in that we work so hard to try to belong, to be accepted. We sacrifice so much of our own identity and in what makes us who we are so that we could blend in. And then at the end of the day, you realize it doesn't matter how much you try. You know, it doesn't matter that you speak perfect English, that you go to college, that you have a successful career. You're still judged by the color of your skin. And she makes such a powerful case against rejecting that, rejecting assimilation, rejecting, you know, embracing white America and wanting to be part of white America. And instead, in us learning how to celebrate who we are. And her piece is, she wrote this essay for our collection, but she was also writing her own book that was published back in March. It's called You Sound Like a White Girl. So if you want to learn more about Julissa's experience, in addition to, you know, reading this essay, I highly recommend You Sound Like a White Girl, where she expands on what she touches on in this essay.
Another part of her essay, she talked about, you know, if you were laughing loud, how that was considered inappropriate behavior. And it also reminds me of what's been happening in baseball, as we've had the influx of Latin baseball players who bring a different sort of celebration mm-hmm. to play Major League Baseball. And it was the same thing, frankly, with African-Americans, and especially in football, bringing a different sort of celebration and how they try to tap that down, how they try to say, that's not appropriate. And what they're really saying is our white culture, the way we operate as white people, this is inappropriate. But as we have these this influx and we have this mix of different people coming in, and, you know, in my eyes, you know, it's time to broaden what's acceptable behavior, to respect there's going to be different ways to celebrate, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And this is why I hate that image of the melting pot. You know, I've never liked that description of what supposedly the U.S. is a melting pot. And I feel like, why do we all have to melt into something instead of celebrating each individual culture and allowing each cultural community to be who they are without also, you know, having to sacrifice their own identity just to blend in. And that's one of the beauties of this country is how multicultural it is and also how multilingual it is. This is our superpower as a country. And so we should continue to encourage and celebrate that diversity.
The last essay I want to talk about is by Razin Zaman, Insider, Outsider, Unlearning My Legal Education. And what struck me most, I mean, just blew me away, was learning about the Christian doctrine of discovery, which justified European colonialism and genocide against indigenous peoples by claiming that colonizers had authority to seize lands from and vanquish non-Christians. And that this was upheld by the Supreme Court in 1823 and still has not been overturned. And it's just shocking. And so she says there's just this systematic inequalities baked into the law. And at some point, she realized that she was trying so hard to adhere to the law as it is that she had to sort of break away from that, because going to law school, acting as a lawyer, had made her more conservative than she really felt she needed to be.
Right. Yeah. And that was a powerful piece in that regard, too, in that she was exploring how she, by going to law school, she began to basically betray who she was and betray the communities that had uplifted her, right? And then, you know, she's exploring of how her time in law school, like she was just being brainwashed and turned into a conservative. And also as a lawyer, how then she has to grapple with like upholding the law, which the law doesn't benefit people of color, which is the clients that she's trying to help. And then how she began to feel that she had joined the army that's oppressing her own community. And I found that perspective to be very illuminating and also heartbreaking, because I think that is something that we have to battle with, you know, but at the same time, it's so important for people of color to enter into these institutions so that we can try to change them. But the reality is that sometimes when we become part of these institutions, we feel that we're becoming part of the problem as well, because it is so hard to change those. So Racine's piece is very powerful in that regard, and what it makes you think about law and how wrong it is. And yet, you know, as much as we try to change it and to make it more just, it's so difficult to do that.
What are you hoping, you and Sonia, what are you hoping that people will get from reading this collection? Not the people who are already part of or support your policies and what you believe in, but the people who are not there yet and have a limited understanding.
Yeah, well, Hopefully they'll pick up the book. I'm not sure if they will. And that, you know, and that is something that you kind of struggle with when you're writing a book, because we don't want to write it for those people, right? I mean, we want to make sure that when we write the book, we're writing it for the people that are part of that community, or who need inspiration, who need to be told, you know, you matter, your voice matters, we see you. So to me, like, that's really the reader that we had in mind, was the reader that needed this inspiration and that needed to be felt and seen. And then, of course, you know, we do hope that it outside of that community, that it does get picked up by readers who want to learn more about the immigrant experience. And hopefully it reminds them of their own family migration, you know, their own ancestors who migrated and what they went through when they did that, and that the hardships, the trauma of being an immigrant, the obstacles that we have to overcome. And I hope it puts a face to the immigration debate, and that it helps people to be a little bit more sympathetic and have more compassion, and make them more aware, you know, of the human cost of anti-immigrant policies and laws in this country.
So we're recording this interview on June 26, 2022. Teaching of history of different communities is being attacked as all being critical race theory. Books are being banned. So talk about the importance of this book and being an inspiration in times like today.
Well, I mean, what's the book banning? You know, it's just showing us how there are people in power who insist on creating a national mythology, right, for this country, and stories that don't fit into that, or that challenge that narrative, get pushed out and silenced. And yet I feel that it's so important for us to continue to push back against that. And this book does that. You know, we're trying to push back against the narrative of bad immigrants, of talking about, you know, just immigration policy and all this anti-immigrant laws and that have been put in place, and the militarization of the border, all of these things that have been happening to us. Like, this book, which is a book of very deeply personal stories, humanizes the immigration issue. And it really helps you to think of immigrants as human beings. And to me, that's always important, to continue to center our humanity, because we live in a country that insists on dehumanizing the immigrant community.
Reina Grande, co-editor of Somewhere We Are Human, Authentic Voices on Migration, Survival, and New Beginnings. Thank you so much for being a guest on Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast edition of Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.